Welcome back to Missing. I am Tim, here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
I am doing so well today, Tim. I hope everyone out there who's listening, I hope they're doing just as well as I'm doing.
I'm excited to reintroduce this case to our audience. Part 2 is coming on Thursday. This is an episode that we recorded a couple of years ago.
We speak about the disappearance of Barbara Louise Cotton. She was 15 years old. She disappeared from Williston, North Dakota on April 11th, 1981. And we speak with the host of the exceptional podcast, Dakota Spotlight.
Yes, his name's James Wallner. Great guy, really dedicated to this missing persons case. And he's done about 5 seasons on his show, Dakota Spotlight. You can check out dakotaspotlight.com. It's kind of a great catch-all. You can obviously link to listen there as well. His podcast is interesting, and obviously we have some similar interests and experiences, Lance, having covered missing persons cases in depth for several years now. And so I hope you enjoy this interview. And if you have any information in the disappearance of Barbara Cotton, please contact the Williston Police Department at 701-577-1212.
All right, we're going to break quick for a commercial here. We're going to be right back with James Wallner.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the host of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
You have been digging into the disappearance of Barbara Louise Cotton for quite some time, and you've been doing a podcast too. Can you tell us a little bit about your deep dive into this disappearance case?
So I've been doing the podcast for a couple years for sure. Believe it or not, Barbara Cotton, I only started working on that in January of this year, but it's just really taken off. This community up in Williston, North Dakota, where she went missing, I've got so much support so quickly, especially my Facebook group. You know, I wanted to start working on it a couple of years ago. You're right there. I'd sent some interview requests to a retired detective, and he respectfully declined. Then I reached out to Williston PD. He suggested I reach out to Williston PD. Never really got any response there at all. And so I kind of dropped it, put on the back burner. And I honestly went up to Williston, where Barbara went missing, in January, thinking this will probably be a one episode thing, right? And a little background, I guess. Barbara went missing on April 11th, 1981. So it was 40 years just recently. The story goes that she was walking home from a restaurant in downtown Williston and just never made it home, 5-block walk on a Saturday night. She's 15 years old, beautiful girl, and everyone I've spoken to says, you know, friends and family, that she was just very kind and generous. And I don't believe it's one of those cliche things we hear in all the stories where, oh, you know, walked into the room and she lit up a room, and it becomes a cliche, right? So I'm kind of weary of even trusting those sources at first, but I gotta say, everything I've learned, she did really seem to be very kind, and perhaps to a fault, a little too trusting and forgiving, or I should say trusting, maybe a little bit gullible even. So that might have eventually got her into trouble. We're not sure, but she's never been seen from or heard from again. And I went up to Williston thinking, you know, here's maybe a one episode story. I'll try to find out what was her route home. And since then, it has just kind of taken off, because I'll tell you what I expected to find out up there. I expected, after 40 years, I would expect the family to say, you know what, we're tired of talking about this, done already. You know, we're so tired of the cops talking to us, and, you know, we don't want to look at, you know, 40 years is a long time. I expected one of those stories where all the leads had been worked out and saturated. But what I found out was that Barbara's siblings, who are in the podcast, have no recollection of ever being spoken to by law enforcement until about 1 or 2 years ago. Their childhood friend, Sandy, was never spoken to. And I've learned during this podcast, I did get an interview with one of the current day investigators. And if I understand this correctly, which I guess I do, the last person to see Barbara, a gentleman named Stacy Werder, was never interviewed by police ever. He's deceased today. He actually hung himself in jail 3 months later. And there's another person who was one of Barbara's friends who said she saw Barbara at a party that night. And there, I could not get it confirmed from present day law enforcement that she was ever spoken to. Or the response I've gotten from them is, well, just because we don't have a record of it doesn't mean they weren't interviewed. And so it's created a lot of frustration. My podcast, you know, looking into this, like I said, I was expecting this is going to be, no one's going to want to talk to me. The police are going to say, here, take a look at this if you want. We don't know what to do. I mean, I've had that happen to me. I've looked at a couple police files from Bismarck PD where they said, you know, we've exhausted everything. You're welcome to look at this. It's open and ongoing. But instead, it's kind of like we suddenly have this situation where people are kind of not in an uproar, but there's a lot of frustrated listeners, people, including the friends and family of, especially the friends of Barbara Cotton, who are like, come on, was this really looked into? And present day investigators are trying, in the interview I had with the one investigator, said, we're not here to talk about mistakes that might have been made, which I guess is true to a certain point. But how do we get to the truth? How do we find out what could have been missed if we don't at least look at that? And I've talked for a long time, so I'm going to stop.
No, okay. You've set up the story nicely for us. I've got several questions. First one, I guess, is how big is the Williston Police Department?
Well, let's see. They probably have, I mean, it's an oil. So this is in the oil country in northwestern North Dakota. So this is I think there's 28,000 people in Williston today. So it's one of the bigger cities in North Dakota. So the Williston Police Department is, you know, appropriately the size for that size of town, whatever that would be.
It's a 25,000 population today?
It's 28,000 today, yeah. I think it was 13 when she went missing.
Oh, so it's definitely grown in the 40 years.
Yes, yes.
And did you say something about it's like an oil town, an oil city?
People up there, they'd speak in terms of oil booms and oil crashes. So with the boom comes money, employers, employment, a lot of people from out of state, right, who maybe background checks weren't always really done correctly. Kind of like the Wild Wild West, the gold rush, right? You get prostitution, drugs, crime goes up, cost of living goes up. So the people, locals, they're on the fence a little bit, right? On the one hand, here comes all this money to our community, but there's a lot of trouble that comes with it.
And you mentioned the last person who saw Barbara was never interviewed by police, but before his death, was there any statement or any account of what he saw that night?
There was something that I discovered, you might say. So I had to search for this guy's name on my own. Williston PD did not give me this name. I had to work off of the fact that I received knowledge from one of Barbara's siblings who had heard from police that I think his first name was Stacy. I did email one of the detectives at Williston PD once I found this individual. I mean, I had to go through newspapers.com searching suicide 1981 Stacy Montana until I finally found an article. I asked Williston PD to confirm so I wouldn't be talking on the podcast in the chance that there were two Stacys that committed suicide in 1981, you know, trying to fact check things. Got no response. So I tracked down this guy's sisters in Northern California, actually up in Yreka, and spoke to the sisters. And they confirmed that it was their brother, because one of the sisters said, "Well, when I got your email, I figured you were either an old friend of my brother's or this has something to do with Barbara Cotton." So they knew that their brother had this association with this girl that is missing. And then in my episode 5, I interviewed both sisters, and they are confident that their brother was not only, he was definitely, according to them, capable of murder. They had some really frightening stories to tell of their own. My whole listener, you know, everyone heard this on episode 5. And then the next episode was this interview with Williston PD. And really the only thing I wanted to, not the only thing, but the main point I wanted to ask them was this Stacy Werder somehow cleared at some point? Because I have two sisters saying he was a bad dude and we've always thought he had something to do with Barbara's disappearance. Well, first of all, I should add, those two sisters were never spoken to by any law enforcement either. I was the first person to talk to them about this.
Well, I find that unbelievable, and not saying that someone's lying, but I find it kind of crazy that that two sisters of this, I guess you can call him a person of interest, Stacy Werder.
He was.
Two sisters feel this way. Do you know what he was in prison for when he committed suicide?
Yeah, it was a small thing. He disorderly conduct, I think, something like that. And their sister said he had mental issues. He was kind of a drifter. I mean, according to the younger sister, they once burned their house down in California when they were kids. And a lot of other stuff that I don't even really want to talk about.
So for 30 years, these two sisters were waiting for a call about Barbara Cotton, and you were that call?
40 years, yeah.
40 years.
And so here's the interesting thing. You guys know about Team Adam, detectives, I think retired detectives who, you know, pro bono retired detectives. My understanding is that, well, more kind of interesting information that reflects on the, you know, I guess the power of a podcast sometimes. Barbara's best friend, childhood friend, has been trying to find answers her whole life, you know, off and on. And 10 years ago, she managed to get the Williston newspaper to print an article. And then I come along 10 years after that. I was asking for answers to questions from Williston PD for weeks and weeks before the podcast came out. Barbara's childhood friend, Sandy Evanson, had been trying to get in return. She had returned a call, never heard anything, and was very frustrated. And then after episode 3 of my podcast came out, I got two emails from the PD. She got a call. Barbara's sister got a call. I mean, it happened immediately. And I mean, that's cool, but it's also a little bit frustrating that it takes someone, annoying guy like me with a microphone, for that to sort of take place, right? But when you're ready for it, there's actually two persons of interest who hung themselves in jail.
Let's talk about that in a second. I want to back up a little bit just to the time that she disappeared. She's 15 years old, in this small city, large town, small city. And you described it a little bit like the Wild West, where there was some, you know, with this type of industry comes a bit of trouble. Was she involved in any of this trouble? And the party that she was at, was this something where there was any sort of illicit drug use or alcohol consumption or anything sordid of nature? Was she involved in any of that?
Yeah. So Barbara was starting to run a little bit, get into a little bit of trouble, I guess. She was arguing a lot with her mother. Basically, Barbara wanted to move out of her house, which added to the fact that law enforcement originally thought she was a runaway, right? So there were a lot of arguments in the home, and Barbara was starting to, I guess I don't know this for certain, but the party she was at, which I had to also track down, I mean, no one has heard of this party until I interviewed law enforcement. They did tell us that this unnamed friend said they saw her at a party, and Barbara's siblings had no idea about this, Barbara's friends. It's the first time anyone's heard about this party, but I did speak to the person who I believe was the host of the party. And yeah, lots of alcohol. And, you know, Barbara was, her behavior was risk. She had risk factors, right? She walked by herself a lot. She trusted everyone. She's walking around at night in a city, like you said, where it's a little bit of a wild, wild west. So,
and is it your belief that what led to her disappearance was a result of anything that might have happened at the party? Maybe somebody had followed her, or am I getting ahead of some details?
We don't know. We don't know. But there are other persons of interest I could tell you about. This other individual who actually did murder two people. In fact, if I say the name Andy Johnson, you recognize her. I know you guys have retweeted some of her stuff. She's an advocate for...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Andy, yep.
I had her on the podcast. Her childhood friend Penny Swanson was 12 years old, and another girl, Renee Davidson, 9 years old, when they were murdered in Rawlings, Wyoming. And that's how I got in touch with Andy, because the man who murdered these two girls, Frank De La Pena, was in Williston when Barbara went missing. So he is another person of interest. And he left Williston, I believe, 3 weeks after Barbara went missing, and immediately drove to Rawlins and tried to abduct several women, and finally did manage to abduct these two young girls in Rawlins and murdered them the same night. So another strong person of interest, right? This guy gets arrested promptly, hangs himself in jail, just like Stacy Werder will do 2 months later.
Okay, so now we have two, you're just about to say, I think the same thing I'm going to say, two people that are very closely related and possible suspects who hang themselves, they're arrested and then they hang themselves within a few weeks of each other?
Yeah, so Frank hung himself in late May, about 1 month after Barbara went missing. Stacy Werder hangs himself 2 months later in Montana. And the connections I do have with these guys, potential connections, are they both worked in the oil industry. Aside from that thing they have in common, that they hung themselves in jail within 3 month period of each other, they both were in Williston when Barbara disappeared. Stacy was seen with her that night. Frank was not, but Frank did kill two girls 3 weeks later. What do you guys think? Is that a coincidence?
I mean, I think all these cases, any unsolved missing persons case or unsolved murder, you're going to find more than one viable person of interest, at least character-wise, who was in the area at the time. I would absolutely focus more on Stacy, though, seeing that he was seen with him, with Barbara that night.
Right. And I am doing that. I just sent out technically, I'm petitioning the courts in Montana to get his autopsy inquest. So there was an autopsy inquest done, and I've learned through, you guys know how this goes. A little bird told me there's photographs in that file. Unfortunately, when he's deceased, but it would be the closest. It's not something I would ever publish, but it would be the closest to us getting to know what Stacy looked like at the time of his death, because we don't have a lot of photographs of him. And another interesting thing to add is pretty much nobody, until some people I spoke with too recently, very few people, except, so Barbara's mother said she saw Barbara with Stacy the night she disappeared. And she kept referring to this guy as her boyfriend. None of her friends, no one else knows about this guy. So it must have been, I'm pretty sure she had just met Stacy.
Going back to these two men who hung themselves, has there been anything beyond what you have discovered? Maybe people telling you about other disappearances, other murders that were in the area prior or just after? Because you discovered that, or you found out that one of them had been arrested for kidnapping and. Was it attempted murder or an actual murder?
Frank De La Pena killed two girls in Rawlings. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, exactly. So aside from that, is there anything else that you've looked at that's maybe sort of adjacent to these crimes, like some unsolved murders or disappearances around that time? Because I feel like you're on the heels of like a potential serial killer.
No, I have not had a lot of time, but I will tell anyone else listening. I just got some bad news last week you know, the state of Wyoming have been fantastic with my open records request. Our hope was that, because the state crime lab processed his van, Frank's van, where the murders took place, and trailer. And, you know, we were like, please tell us that Montana kept forensic evidence from that. And they looked and looked, and they really did. They did a great job. And, they were themselves like, we're just so sorry. We don't know. We don't have it anymore. And even worse, I guess worse, there's no photographs either. But I agree with you. This guy could have killed other people.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsor. Thanks to our sponsors. And now we're back to the program. James, what's your background? I'm just curious how you got into this this case and podcast.
Oddly, I studied photojournalism and English in college, and then I never worked with it at all. I moved to Sweden. I worked in web development and database development over 20 years, and I came back. I was doing that here in North Dakota, and I started on the podcast about 3 years ago as a reaction to not exactly fake news, but even just the untruth, like Barstool stories I've been hearing, the way people have taken Facebook to somehow be news. I don't know. I got in this situation where I just wanted to look at one story my first season and focus on facts and critical thinking and can we find the truth? Can one person find the truth? And kind of wanted to demonstrate to others, like, you can do this, like, it's a lot of hard work, but ask more questions, you'll get more truth usually. But so I finally, dumped my IT career for now and the good money that went with it to do something I'm very passionate about.
That's really commendable, because what you're doing is something that, you said it at the beginning of this, no one has done in 40 years now, over 40 years. So it has to be something really interesting to reprogram your brain or reprogram the way you're thinking career-wise to jump into something with no conclusion, because I can imagine being someone, I'm not in IT, but I can imagine somebody in IT having a definitive result. Like, you do this and this and this happens. It must be endlessly frustrating to do something on one end of the equation and not see the result, especially when you're talking about people who, you mentioned critical thinking, and you'd like to see more critical thinking. This must be loaded with non-critical thinking people if nothing's happened in 40 years. So I can't. Is this frustrating to you? And how does your passion overcome that frustration?
Yeah, it gets frustrating. You get a lot of, I'm sure you guys got as well, a lot of leads from listeners, and you want to look at all of them. And some are great tips, and some seem like you can't even quite connect the dots yourself. How did this person come up with this theory? And I would say with this season with Barbara Cotton, the most frustrating thing was that somehow it was quite obvious that, you know, I say we at this point, it's my podcast, but I have this great following, and it's sort of almost a mini movement that started for Barbara. We're not, I listened to your podcast recently about your new show, A Few Bad Apples with Catherine.
Great show.
And she kind of brought this up too about, I'm not anti-police. I'm just asking questions about, why wasn't this person spoken to? You don't have to immediately go, well, we're not here to bad mouth the investigators back then. We're like, no, we're not here for that reason either. We're trying to find answers to what happened to Barbara Cotton. So that part gets frustrating.
And do you find that you hit a lot of roadblocks when people will automatically assume that your intention is to just exploit bad investigations or mistakes that police have made? When I think acknowledging the mistakes is more important, just because then you can move on. But you're not trying to exploit those mistakes. Do people get that confused?
I think so. And, you know, I haven't had a lot of criticism. I should say, you know, people who really want to know what happened to Barbara understand that, okay, in order to sort of reignite this investigation, we still have to understand the what happened in the beginning. I mean, there could be very important information by knowing what was not done, right? But as I told a friend of mine who is in law enforcement, not in Williston, that I said to him, you know, in your career, I bet you had to arrest a lot of people that you didn't want to arrest, you know, because you liked them. You were rooting for them, right? I feel the same way when it comes to criticism towards law enforcement. I got an email from a listener who said, I guess I'll reach out to you, Mr. Wallner. Like, I'm not Mr. Wallner, call me James, but, you know, he says, I left a tip with Williston PD 3 weeks ago, you know, after a lot of discussions with my family. Something happened in our family 11 days before Barbara went missing, 3 blocks from where she went missing. We finally decided, you know, we're going to leave this tip. And it was took a lot of courage, and I have not heard a single word after leaving a voicemail and sending an email. So my point with my friend who's a cop who had to arrest people that he didn't want to arrest, this is something I don't want to hear. I don't want to have to tell people that this guy didn't get a... I don't want to tell this, but then I'm in the situation where, well, I have to. It's been 3 weeks. He's not even got a confirmation that they got his email. So I put it on the podcast, called up the head of investigations there, got a comment from him. He says, that's not acceptable. And then he got a response within 5 hours. But I don't enjoy it. I don't want to tell that story. I want to find out what happened to Barbara.
But I guess the case is that you have to do something like that because it's inevitable when you're looking at something that's been unsolved for so long. The only way to get to these answers would be through something that you don't really enjoy doing, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the story. I can't just ignore it because people are uncomfortable with people criticizing law enforcement. I mean, that can't be the way our society works. And, you know, I listened also to your Justice for Jacob with Eric Carter Landine, True Consequences. He also talked about that when they did that 10 Days for Jacob, I think it was called, and campaign, and he was also didn't enjoy doing that, but he had not heard anything for so many months. It wasn't something he did to criticize them. It's just he's trying to get a response, and it worked, right?
Tell us about the state of the case, I guess. Has Barbara been legally declared deceased?
Yes, she was in 1998, and my feeling on that is that her mother was getting close to the end of her life. She died in 2004. Her son, Barbara's older brother, Frank, died in 1998. Her brother, Frank, is also a person of interest, according to Williston PD. They told us that. And so just before he died, Louise Cotton, Barbara's mother, had her daughter legally declared deceased. And interestingly, there's a headstone in North Dakota where Frank is buried. It's a double headstone, and it has Frank's name on one side and Barbara's on the other, and it just says missing at the bottom. So it's a little interesting, or whatever word you would use, that she's buried. Well, she's not buried there. It's just a name on a headstone next to her brother, who Williston PD say is a person of interest also.
Was he at the party that night?
Not to my knowledge, no. But Stacy Werder, I believe, was. And the state of the case, I guess, is they say it's open and ongoing. Have you guys had any experience with open and ongoing cases where the victim is legally declared deceased? And has it affected the open records laws in any way that you know of?
I think it's supposed to get you additional files and paperwork or access to those investigatory files. But no, I don't think from experience we've ever had that situation.
Yeah, it makes for an interesting discussion because, you know, I'm in contact with other people a son of a missing man here in North Dakota. He told me that law enforcement told him if they ever had him legally, his father legally declared legally deceased, that they would have to shut down the investigation. But Williston PD has said they will never shut down this investigation. And another thing I'll throw out there is that in my interview with Williston PD, she did tell us that the record keeping, the documents are really sketchy until about 1985, 4 years after Barbara goes missing. And I've been assuming it's, you know, sloppy work. Things were not documented enough.
And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Thanks to our sponsors. And now we're back to the program.
When you say that the record keeping was sketchy, are you talking about, like you said, missing documents, or is it a combination of missing documents and just poorly drafted reports of the incident?
I can't say with any confidence because I've not seen the file myself. But I do know that Williston PD has told me in the interview that they have just boxes and boxes and boxes of information, and as some sort of indication what a big investigation was done. And yet none of that stuff contains the stuff we really need, like the interview with Stacy Werder, if it ever happened, or this unnamed friend who saw her at a party. And so it was kind of like they're saying, at the one hand, we've got all this stuff, but we don't have the stuff you're asking for. But that doesn't mean it didn't happen. It just become kind of frustrating.
And are you still working with law enforcement?
I just sent a follow-up tip to Detective Derry a few minutes ago. I sent him a tip last week, and he responded right away, and he said he found it interesting. And I just followed up with another one. I just told my listeners in my last episode that there's something that, unfortunately, I can't talk about. You get to this point where, I told my listeners, I'm so sorry, I can't tell you more about this. You followed along with me all this way, and now I have this tip, I guess, for Williston PD, and I just can't tell you. It's so frustrating as a podcaster. You feel like you're letting your audience down, right? But I just cannot reveal. But basically what I told them was, I don't feel like I have the key to this story, but I think I know where there is, which lock they need to unlock. If law enforcement can find their own key or pick that lock, that's a better way of saying it. If they can pick that lock, we might get some answers.
Are you this close or this in the weeds with any other disappearance or missing person or unsolved case, whether it's something that you've covered or you plan on covering? Or is this about as deep as you've gotten?
This is probably the deepest I've gotten. And in fact, my earlier seasons were not all unsolved cases. I did a couple documentary style things about resolved cases, but I think my future is about, missing persons. Someone asked me about 12 years ago. I was just thinking about the other day. You get that question, if you became independently wealthy, what would you do? That whole question. And my answer was, I think I'd start some kind of company or organization to help families find their missing family members. And that was like 12 years ago. So I guess it's always been in here. And with this season, I'd kind of like to stick on this topic or whatever you want to call it.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for your time. Keep up the great work and keep us in the loop on any case developments as the podcast moves along.
I sure will. And I cannot thank you guys enough for having me on. This was a big day for me. I've told a lot of friends. You guys have done fantastic work. And a lot of people I know listen to you. I remember listening to you guys started on an airplane about 4 years ago and got hooked right away. So congrats to all your great work.
Well, thank you so much. And same to you, to echo what Tim was saying. This isn't like you're seeing right now. Like, it's not easy. There's not a lot of money involved in it, and it's a 100% passion. And you know, when you speak about this, you can hear it. And if there's anything else that we can do for you, any way we can, you know, other than spreading the word with this episode and with Barbara's story, let us know. The work that you have right now, there's a petition out there, right, that to sign. If you want to give that information, that'd be great.
we went with change.org. First time I did a change.org petition. And, you know, I thought we're up in rural North Dakota. You know, I have a good following, but I thought if we get 1,000 signatures, that'll be cool. And then we got two, and we're at 3,200 now. So, and I've, the policymakers or changemakers is the chief of police of Williston and one of the city council members. So they get emails, you know, when we hit 3,000, I'm sure they got an email again, like, hey, we're still here. And it can be found at change.org simply by searching Barbara Cotton.